from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Tensions between the U.S. and Iran continue to mount following Iran's announcement yesterday that it has surpassed limits on uranium enrichment imposed by the 2015 nuclear deal. At 9, we'll talk about the latest developments. Then at 9:30, a deadly invasive fungus that has already killed millions of bats on the East Coast has reached California. We'll talk about the threat to California's bat population and why you should care. That's all next after this news. Welcome to this morning's forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Iran's Atomic Energy Agency acknowledged yesterday that it has surpassed uranium enrichment limits set by the 2015 nuclear deal. The announcement came a day after the United States, which withdrew from the deal last year, warned of further sanctions and isolation. This is Iran's second major breach of the nuclear agreement. On July 1st, it exceeded the deal's uranium stockpile cap. And meanwhile, tensions with the U.S. remain high following Iran's downing of an unmanned American drone last month. We're going to discuss what Iran's actions mean for regional and global security and its relations with Western powers. Joining us is Nihal Tusi. She's foreign affairs correspondent with Politico, and we welcome you to the program. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And I guess the place to begin here is where we are at the present moment. There have been more threats from the United States about additional sanctions and isolation, and we've been hearing a lot about crossing a line, which we haven't heard, I guess, since Syria and the Obama administration when the chemical weapons were discovered. But what, at this point, we've got a couple of war hawks in the administration, at least where Iran is concerned. Where is this all going?
Well, I think it kind of depends on who you ask in the administration. You know, if it's Mike Pompeo or John Bolton, they're probably going to push very hard for the fullest sanctions possible. Pompeo already has. They are reaching out to Europe. They're telling Europeans to snap back all their sanctions that they had lifted as part of the Iran deal. But President Trump himself has been very hesitant to escalate this particular feud too much. He doesn't really want to get into any sort of military conflict with Iran. And then, of course, there's Europe. And what we hear today is that European powers have, you know, triggered the mechanism within the Iran nuclear deal to try to resolve breaches. And so since Iran appears to be in violation of the deal, they're going to want to convene a meeting in the next few days to discuss what to do. And that could include reimposing sanctions on Iran.
Is there a threat of war here? There's certainly been a lot of talk as if war looms somehow over the horizon.
Well, look, there, neither Iran nor President Trump want to go to war. And there are plenty of people who may not mind, you know, a military strike, but don't necessarily want a full-fledged war. But the real concern a lot of people have is that we might actually kind of fall into war mistakenly, if that's even possible nowadays. You know, there could be somebody who fires a shot without thinking, or a rogue element that does something that basically leads to a crisis that spirals out of control, with each side feeling like they have to respond. And so there's a lot of concern about, you know, making sure that whatever response there is to any sort of provocation is proportional. And so President Trump himself has spoken about this. I mean, he for a while considered a military strike on Iran because Iran had shot down an unmanned drone. But then he decided that that was too big of a response to what Iran had done.
Yeah, he was counting up the possibility of many lives at stake, and it seems that he doesn't want to go into war. In fact, at this moment, we have President Trump saying, I'll sit down and talk with them. I would agree to that, and without any preconditions.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, President Trump took office thinking if he could tear up the Iran deal and just, you know, be really, really mean to Iran using sanctions and a lot of rhetoric, that the Iranians would just come back to the table with their tail between their legs and sit down and, you know, he could get a better deal out of them. I think he just thought it was going to be really easy. But that's not how Iran functions. That's not how the Iranian government thinks. Their entire being is rooted in this anti-American view that was forged in a revolution of 40 years ago. And they're not just simply going to, like, bow down to America because the U.S. president tells them to.
What about the threats now that we're hearing from Iran about 60-day increments? What do we know about that at this point?
Right. So far, what they have done is they've stockpiled more uranium than they're supposed to under the deal. They're enriching uranium above the deal's limits. And what they said is every 60 days, they're going to take one additional move, or maybe two, I suppose, that is some sort of a violation of the deal. It could be a small violation. It could be a medium or bigger violation. But the point is they want to do this incrementally. They want to do it because they want to put pressure on Europe to come up with some sort of way to relieve the sanctions pressure that they are feeling. But for Europe to do that, that would put European firms and European governments potentially in violation of U.S. sanctions. And for a lot of European companies and European governments, you know, when it comes down to it, they're going to pick the American market over the Iranian market. And so this is a game of, I guess it's a game of chicken, I suppose. I don't know who blinks first. There's all sorts of metaphors. And the Iranians just feel like if they can walk this tightrope, and there's another metaphor for you, that, you know, maybe they can get some sort of sanctions relief in the long run and split the Europeans further from the Americans.
We're talking with Nihal Tusi, and she is foreign affairs correspondent for Politico. There are battles going on internally in Iran, though, and let's talk about that for a moment, Nihal. I mean, we've got Zarif, foreign minister, who essentially is being blamed for the deal not working from their perspective economically. And we've got here in the United States, as you mentioned, people like Mike Pompeo, as well as John Bolton, pretty much hawkish by any standard. So what are we seeing? What do we know specifically in Iran? We've got the reformists, and I'm including Rouhani in this, who seem to be getting eclipsed to some degree by Revolutionary Guard and more conservative elements.
Well, look, it's important to remember that the U.S. was the one that reached this deal first, right? So the U.S. over a year ago walked away from the deal and imposed sanctions. And for a year, the so-called reformists or moderates, you know, within the Iranian system, it's all relative, right? You know, they didn't do anything. They stuck to the deal. They did not violate its terms. And they had that level of confidence that they could get away with that. But over time, the pressure built. The hardliners in Iran, the ones who really never wanted this deal in the first place, who always said you couldn't trust the Americans, they have gained more leverage. And now you have Zarif, Rouhani, and others saying, we're going to start violating the deal because the U.S. did. And so they are losing their political power. At the end of the day, though, in Iran, the supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, he has the ultimate say. And, you know, Rouhani and others will line up behind him and what he decides. And right now, I think Khamenei feels pretty burned that he took an agreement with the United States. And he does not seem inclined to talk to President Trump, no matter what Trump says.
Well, since you mentioned Ayatollah Khamenei, he has also said that he does not want a nuclear weapon, that it goes against Islamic belief, and particularly Shia belief. And this is not something, according to at least statements he's made, that Iran wants to move toward. Are we to put any credibility in that at all?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, when it comes to interpreting religion, people can find various ways to interpret religion to fit their convenience at that particular time. Perhaps the Ayatollah believes that right now there's an Islamic prohibition against nuclear weapons, but down the line, he might decide that there's another way to interpret the text. I think ultimately, you know, it is true that they've never had a nuclear weapon in Iran, but it is also true that they have gotten very, very close, and that they have used that as a way to have leverage over the international community and in the Middle East. And, you know, if they do, the thing is, if they do break free of this deal, and if they get closer to a nuclear weapon, even if they never actually take that final step, it is very likely to lead the Saudis, the Emiratis, and others in the region to try to find their own leverage against Iran. And then you also have the Israelis, who have long threatened to actually, you know, they see Iran as an existential threat to them. So they have threatened to engage in a military, preemptive military strike if they feel like Iran is going to get a nuclear weapon. So you have this threat of an arms race, and that could spill into even an even broader conflict among countries that are already feuding in multiple arenas in the first place.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more with you about that, but there are no direct channels between the United States and Iran, and that's part of the seriousness of this and the volatility of it. But there's been talk about possibly diplomacy between Jerusalem and Tehran.
I wouldn't put a lot of stock in that. I mean, it's possible that Arab countries that are willing to deal with both Iran and the Israelis might be willing to serve as intermediaries. I don't see a Netanyahu-Khamenei summit anytime soon. And I also would be careful.
Well, excuse me, Netanyahu has to be reelected, too. I mean, he's going through another election, and now Ehud Barak is going against him, apparently. So things are up for grabs here. And the Iranians can, the Iranians also can wait out this election. I mean, they can say, I think it's a piece of yours that I read where you were saying, you know, here we are talking, the Trump administration is talking to Kim Jong-un, and he has a weapon. Iran, they're not talking to, and they don't have a weapon. And so it might be to their advantage to at least continue until perhaps Trump loses in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think it's kind of, you know, totally wacky. If you're the Iranians sitting there thinking, okay, we agreed to this deal, we agreed to give up most of our nuclear program, and this is how we get treated. And yet there's Kim in North Korea building and increasing his nuclear arsenal, and he gets to have three lavish meetings with the president of the United States. It's so interesting and fascinating. It's like living in a, you know, kind of an Alice in Wonderland type of world right now.
I think you were going to use other words besides interesting and fascinating. You were on the verge.
You know, as a reporter, it's really hard to do that, like, because we're not supposed to have opinions. So we basically are stuck with words like interesting and fascinating so that, you know, we can't, you know, share what we really think.
Well, I certainly intuited that. But let me go on a little bit with you about the United States wanting to make sure somehow the terrorism isn't used in the Middle East. I mean, Iran's been behind Hezbollah. They've been certainly working in Gaza and in so many different ways to undermine the possibilities of ongoing peace in the Middle East, certainly in Lebanon particularly, but especially in Yemen. And you have to ask what would happen if this got carried away at this point. Like you said, it's in nobody's interest to have a war, but at the same time, things are increasingly more tense and more volatile.
Well, look, there's already two wars going on in which the Iranians are using proxies against Arab countries and vice versa. I mean, we have Syria, we have Yemen, right? There's already wars going on. And so the question is, are there going to be more? And
that's certainly true. I think that was really the import of my question, whether or not there will be more or might be more. And at this point, we don't know. But let's talk about the Saudis in this context, because they're certainly behind a lot of the war that's going on in Yemen, and Iran is behind the Houthis. And so you've already got a conflict there, and you have increasing tensions between the Saudis and Iran, which makes us wonder if it might be in the interest of, the Crown Prince of Iran, or for that matter, the Crown Prince of the United Arab Emirates, to go to war with Iran.
I mean, I think from what we've seen lately, they so far are calculating that it is not a good idea to do that. For instance, when you've had the recent attacks on oil tankers that the U.S. has blamed on Iran, the Emiratis, they have access to basically the same intelligence. They have not been willing to say it's Iran's fault. And that is a sign to me that they are trying to de-escalate tensions, because they're suddenly realizing, oh, wait a minute, if we go to war, this could be very expensive and very bloody, and we might all end up losing. And even the Saudis have said things like, let's try to calm things down. And it's just, you know, I think everybody wants to avoid that sort of a conflict. But I don't think there's a lot of exit ramps, and people are looking for them, and they just don't know what to do, because everybody also wants to save face.
We're talking with Nihal Tusi, and again, she's foreign affairs correspondent for Politico, and we are having some problems with our phone. So I want to invite listeners to get involved in this. The best way you can do that now is get in touch with us on Twitter or Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or you can email any questions or comments you have to forum@kqed.org. We're trying to get our technology in order here where the phones are concerned, but you can be involved in the program by Twitter or by email or Facebook. In fact, comment from Jake, and let me go to this comment. Jake writes, why should the U.S. waste time, attention, and money in Iran when the result will just be a war? We are clueless about how to solve the problems in the Middle East. The war in Iraq proved that. A better way to ensure that the economic activity in the Gulf proceeds as normal would be to encourage China and or Japan to patrol the Straits of Hormuz. This would deflect the problem away from the U.S. You say what, Nihal Tusi?
I think there's a lot going on beyond this. I mean, look, the U.S. feels an obligation to Israel, which is extremely worried about Iran. We have our friendship with the Saudis, who are still a major source of oil in the world. And so we're worried about the oil markets, and we worry about what Iran's activity does to the oil markets. The idea of letting the Chinese do any kind of security patrolling there, I don't think would go well over well with anybody right now in Washington, because there's a lot of anti-Chinese sentiment because of the way the Chinese have been acting on many, many levels that people view as simply a threat to the Western way of life. And who knows if the Chinese would be even willing to do that. These are great theoretical proposals that this person is making. I just think the reality is a bit more difficult. But I also do think that there is definitely this argument that, why would we do this? Why would we go and engage in what is going to be an extremely expensive war when we're still in Afghanistan and we're still in Iraq?
Point well taken. And I'm actually going to read another listener comment here. Just let this be on the record. A listener writes, does no one see the irony of this administration going after Iran to enforce the terms of the Iran nuclear deal that the U.S. pulled out of? This administration and his crew had only ill will for Iran in the first place. There is irony in this. And certainly you can say, I think, Nihal, that the United States, it's clear that they would like Iran to stay in this deal.
Well, yes. I mean, this is the weird thing, and it's not something they're really willing to say out loud, right? I mean, but it's something you hear privately, is they don't actually want Iran to leave the deal because they don't want Iran to start racing to build a bomb. And so they would prefer if Iran would stay in the deal, but also they want to sanction Iran because they want to reduce the regime's access to money that it can use to support terrorist groups outside its borders. So in a way, right now, for a while, the U.S. has the best of both worlds. It is definitely hurting the Iranian economy. It is definitely reducing the Iranian regime's access to funding. And meantime, Iran is still, for the most part, sticking to the deal. And I think the Americans are hoping that they can keep this as a status quo for a while. I just don't think the Iranians are willing to do that forever. Well, and their goal seems to be to wait out Trump.
No, I was just going to say their cash and oil exports are dwindling. I mean, they have to be really at a kind of wit's end on this and thinking, what are we going to do? We're going to actually breach this treaty and see where it goes if we continue to breach it.
Exactly. I mean, I think they are also in a difficult position, but they've also had very tough economic conditions in the past. This is a regime that is very clever about getting around sanctions. The Chinese, for instance, have indicated they're going to keep importing Iranian oil. I feel like they think that they can outweigh Trump for the next 18 months. Now, if he gets reelected, it's a different ballgame. They might have to come back to the table.
But the only way to salvage this would be negotiations. And like I said, we don't have a two-way channel to talk to Iran.
Well, I think that's always perhaps a bit exaggerated. I would believe there has to be some sort of a back channel, at least at the CIA, to reach Iranian intelligence. And we also have intermediaries like Sweden, Oman, and others who can carry messages back and fro with us to them. So it's not impossible. It is doable to talk to the Iranians. And I mean, frankly, President Trump is using Twitter to do it.
Point well taken. By the way, here's Elliot who writes, insane is the right word. Why doesn't the journalist just use it? Fascinating it is not. I just wanted to give him an opportunity to state this. And by the way, we do have the phones up and working now, I'm glad to say, relieved to say. Our toll-free number is available, and you can join us at 866-733-6786. Again, that number to call, 866-733-6786. And here's a caller. Bobby, you're on the air. Good morning.
Comment that I'm
I thought the phones were working, Bobby. Sorry about that. We'll certainly endeavor to make sure that they are back in working order here as best we can. But at the meantime, what is the European response? How do you read that, Nihal? I mean, at this point, President Trump is talking, tough talk. At one point, he was even using words like obliteration if Iran says anything against America and that sort of thing. But are we getting any bellicose talk from the EU or any of the European signatories in this?
France has been a little out front. They really want Iran not to make any more breaches of the deal. The UK is upset with Iran right now because they impounded an Iranian tanker heading to Syria with oil, and now there's back and fro on that. But look, I got to tell you, I was in Brussels a couple of weeks ago and talking to European officials, and they are so upset with the United States. I mean, it's easy. Honestly, they're more upset with the U.S. than they they are with Iran. They're extremely frustrated. They feel like this Trump administration does not have a unified message. They feel like they're getting completely different things when they talk to different people. They don't know exactly what the strategy is. And they just know that they're caught in the middle. And they, you know, Europeans really, really, really believe in diplomacy, right? They did the whole war thing. And they have over the past 70 years been about building institutions and multilateralism and cooperation. And they feel like the Trump administration is just trying to tear all of that down. And they feel like they're going to be casualties of all this. And they're closer to Iran. Look, if there is a war in the Middle East with Iran, it's going to cause a huge migration surge, right? Even more refugees, even more people desperate, getting out of these desperate conditions. And Europe is going to be the one that feels it, not the United States. And so they're very, very upset.
Let's go back to the Middle East just for a moment, because there was talk about some kind of plan that would broker a peace, or at least move towards some kind of peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians. That seems dubious at this point, but there was all this talk about Jared Kushner putting forth multi-million dollar economic ideas with the Saudis and others that would help bring some kind of peace. This is pretty much eclipsing that, isn't it?
I mean, it's certainly taking away a lot of oxygen from what could have been attention that had gone to the Israeli-Palestinian peace process, or lack thereof. I mean, Kushner had his conference, his economic workshop, as he called it, on the issue, where he laid out this, I think it was a $50 billion plan to invest in the Palestinian economy and that sort of thing. But frankly, it was kind of buried under news about the threats between the U.S. and Iran and the fears of a war. But I will say that's like part of the reason that Kushner has been able to at least get some Arab countries to participate in this so far, is that they want to stay on the U.S.'s good side, because they are very worried about Iran. And so they're willing to go so far, not too far, but so far on dealing with Israel and, you know, sort of blessing, but not really blessing this Kushner approach, because they want to make sure that the administration does not let up its pressure on Tehran.
Let me read a tweet and get your response. Nahal Tusi, again with us, foreign affairs correspondent for Politico. Listener writes, or tweets, I should say, the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty from 1970 is in force, and this prohibits Iran from developing nuclear weapons and also allows uranium enrichment. Why is no one mentioning this?
You know, it's something that actually should be mentioned more often in stories. Yes, Iran is a signatory to the NPT. And they always say that when people say, well, you don't, you know, you're not really serious about this nuclear deal. You're going to just go out afterward and get a bomb. They say, look, we signed this NPT decades ago. We said we're not going to try to get nuclear weapons. But it does give us a right to have a peaceful nuclear program, which would require enriching uranium. I think it's something that should be mentioned more often.
Well, at this point, Nahal, optimistic, pessimistic, give us your take.
I'm just really busy, that's all.
Sorting it out, right?
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us. Good to have you aboard here with us.
Thank you.
That's again Nahal Tusi. She is foreign affairs correspondent for Politico. We talked about the increasing escalation of tensions with Iran exceeding their limits from the 2015 nuclear deal. We're going to shift gears and talk about a fungus that's deadly to bats. It's been discovered here in California. Stay tuned for that. It's up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.